my captains, I didn't allow them to be the kings. They were the ones that had to carry the balls. They were the ones that had to clean up the field. They're the ones that had to clean the locker room and the bus. They served the other kids. It wasn't a you have arrived. It was you have more responsibility than anyone else. So.
Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. Hello, folks, and welcome back to the WFO Life Podcast. Today, we have another series interview on with coaches. And today I've got Lieutenant Colonel Chris Story back on, as always, and we have a really special guest today. We have Coach Lee Crisp, who is currently the head coach of the Medina Valley High School football team. I met Coach Crisp about a year ago, I guess, at a ACTS retreat put on by the Catholic Church in Castroville, Texas. So shout out to all those guys in the men's group there that were part of that awesome event. And Coach Crisp was the head of my table, if you will. I was one of the ACTS retreatees, and he was one of the folks putting that on, one of the support mentors there. And I just thought he was a great guy, had a ton of wisdom, seemed like a really put-together individual. And I would love to talk and add him into our coaching series. Remember, we talked about how coaching is really, these people are mentors, and they don't just have wisdom about sport, but they often help us shape our lives. And I know I've had coaches that have done that with me. So I couldn't have think of anybody better to have on than Coach Crisp. So, hey, Lee, welcome to the WFO Life Podcast.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. And Chris, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Doing great. Like I was telling Coach before we started recording, looking forward to escaping the cold, snowy yard I'm looking at and getting back to South Texas. So it'll be nice.
Yeah, I'm excited because it's been a while since you've been down here, and I understand maybe we're going to get to spend some time. You're going to come stay at the farm a little bit, so we get to maybe even do some in-person interviews. And I kind of kicked it around. Maybe, you know, it's kind of weird with the whole COVID thing going on, but I thought maybe we could get a few of the guys together that follow us on the WFO Life Tribe and maybe do a little 5K or something at the park, or, you know, maybe kind of some kind of loosely organized little thing there.
But great.
We'll just have to play that by ear.
Yeah, awesome. Look forward to it.
Hey, so Coach, let's talk about, tell us a little about yourself, where you grew up and what your background looks like.
Sure. I grew up actually in Castroville. My parents moved, they were both from around the area, moved us out here. And so I was born and raised in Castroville, graduated from Medina Valley in 1999, played football and all that, you know, ran a little track, played some basketball. Went to Southwest Texas my freshman year of college, transferred out to Texas A&M where I finished up in 2003. And, you know, I knew when I was in high school that I wanted to teach. And so it seemed like kind of a natural extension of that to go into coaching. And so that I kind of pursued that as I moved forward in college. And so when I came out, started my student teaching at MacArthur High School and got hired on there before I ever finished the student teaching. And that's kind of the beginning of my career.
How you started out.
Yeah. So did you always know that you wanted to be a coach, or was that kind of, you knew you wanted to be a teacher, and if coaching was part of the gig, you were going to go for it, or was that always part of your plan?
Well, you know, when I realized what I wanted to do I think my junior year in high school, you know, one of your teachers asked you that question, what are you going to do when you graduate, or, you know, well, what are your plans? And I told her I wanted to teach. I wanted to be an English teacher. And so kind of blew her mind. But as I was going through the process, I was going through the process of, you know, getting my degree. It seemed, you know, it just seemed like that's the right thing to do, you know? And so by the time I graduated college, I knew I wanted to coach as well. I kind of, you know, dove head first as soon as I had the opportunity, volunteering with at MacArthur, and then getting hired on. I think it was December of that semester. So
do you have teachers in your family, that type of thing?
No, my dad was a roughneck for a long time when I was growing up, and he went into becoming a mechanic and worked in a gravel mine, and which is what he currently does, runs a gravel mine operation out here in south of San Antonio. And then my mom was a, you know, I was the reason she dropped out, but she went and got her GED and was a clerical worker. And so I knew I didn't want to do what my dad or right. my mom did. I mean, that right. was always dad's deal was, you know, I had to do a lot of work with him, did a lot of odd jobs, you know, growing up. And so it was like, do you want to do this for the rest of your life? And I said, no. So
yeah.
Help me set some goals.
Yeah. So like a blue collar background, that's kind of how we have very similar backgrounds. You know, my father was a firefighter. My mother worked in refineries, and we were a family that if you needed your, you know, a roof repaired or you're going to re-roof the house, we did it, you know, like growing up. And so I had the same story as like, I remember it's like August in South Texas and we're re-roofing our house. And me and, you know, he hired basically me and my friends to help him do this. And I remember asking him, you know, like, man, people do this for a living? And he's like, yeah. And he goes, that's why you need to stay in school. know, he's really cool. Emphasizing to me. I was like, yeah, that's, you know, and all my friends that remember that lesson. So that kind of blue, you know, there's no shame in doing it. It's just, it's tough work, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, plus there's no better way to find out your shortcomings in life than to help your dad with the work around the house or fixing the car, right? It's like, why are you so stupid? Yeah, get the right wrench. You know, so
yeah. I could never find the 9/16 wrench. And he had like 10 of them in the drawer.
I know. It's like, I know I'm so stupid, Dad. I'll never be anything.
That's hilarious. All right. So kind of education was definitely important. You put teaching first. Now I hear, like, I talk to folks about you a little bit, and I understand you were a pretty solid athlete. So were you, what did you, like, positions you play in football, things like that?
I would say I was relatively good. That's, compared to the guys that I had around me, you know, we weren't a very good football team, especially my senior year. But early on, you know, I started on varsity football, or started playing varsity football when I was a sophomore. But I was a guy that just sort of helped out, you know.
Right, right.
Started on the offensive line there, and I played a little linebacker. Okay. And then it was my junior and senior year, I moved to offensively to a fullback tight end slot. And then I played linebacker my entire career. But, you know, I've coached, this is my 18th year, and I've realized that, you know, I was maybe good for a small 3A high school, you know, in the middle of nowhere. But
right.
I was relatively good compared to the rest of the athletes in the state of Texas. So I was kind of slow. And I was fairly intelligent, but that was the only thing I had going for me. So,
well, you know, it's interesting. The small schools like that, they – a lot of times what's interesting, I live really close, and the community that I serve is like Orange Grove, Texas, Odom. A lot of these, you know, they got these really small high schools. What's interesting is these kids are able to play every sport. You know, and I, you know, my school, when I went to Cal Island High School, and it was, you know, it's been, you know, 4A, 5A on and off. And the interesting thing is nowadays the kids all specialize. Like if you play football, it's a pretty good chance you probably aren't going to play basketball. Probably you're not going to play baseball. There's no very, you know, because the teams get so specialized in one area that they can't really, these kids don't do anything. But you go to Odom High School or you go to Orange Grove and these kids, well, I'm on the golf team. I run track. You know, I play football. They do everything. And I think that's kind of cool that, you know, you had that experience.
There's a lot more opportunity for that in the small school. You know, I've worked primarily at the 6A level. And mm-hmm. you do see a lot more specialization, and it's the difficulties in the amount of competition based on the numbers of students that are there.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to break through if you're playing football and there, you know, basketball season starts before your football season ends. Well, you got some catching up to do. And then,
well, yeah, I was going to say, Coach, there at Cal Allen, even back in the day, I mean, you know, Cal Allen's been somewhat of a football powerhouse, as you probably well know, for a long time. And, you know, Coach Danaher was there when we were there. And I remember I was a pretty good basketball player, and I transferred in from out of the area. And I remember playing like pickup basketball in the summer, and I had signed up for the football class and, you know, started the 2-a-day workouts, and the head basketball coach said, you know what kind of football we play here, right? And because I was about the same size I am now, you know, I was 6 foot, about 185 pounds, and I was pretty fast. And, you know, I was a receiver in middle school. And they're like, well, unless you're excited about hitting linebackers and safeties, you know, for 4 years, I would suggest you stick to basketball.
That's a smash mouth variety of football they play down there.
Yeah. So I think I was maybe cheated out of a high school football career, you know, but it was fun, and it was good, you know, being part of a culture like that. Because I think anytime the football team and, you know, athletic director sets a tone for excellence, like I'm sure we'll get into with you, I think all the other sports seem to follow. So I had fun playing there.
Yeah, that's been my experience is you know, when particularly when your football team starts rolling, everyone else kind of benefits from that, even in the classroom. I mean, I've had some good experiences, and that culture piece is huge. So
nice.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. That's kind of, we had been texting back and forth in the last week or so, and one of the things I had asked you how the season went this year and that type of thing, and you mentioned culture, and that kind of was one of the themes that we wanted to inject into this series Chris and I have been working on with coaches. And so I think we'll start getting into that, but I want to go back up to your coaching background. You know, you've been coaching 18 years. You're not new at this. And but is Medina Valley, is that your first, you know, kind of AD head coaching position, or had you been a head coach at another earlier in your career?
I've been a head coach, but not a head football coach. When I was at MacArthur, I got the head coaching job, a head soccer job. I coached boys soccer there.
Oh, interesting. And, okay. That's cool.
I did that for 5 years, and I was also the head boys soccer coach at Reagan at my time there. And so,
oh, nice.
I had some experience, you know, and that's really at MacArthur's where I sort of realized the importance of building a team culture. Was I took a team, and I knew nothing about soccer. It wasn't even an option when I was growing up here. So,
right.
I did know how to train athletes, and so that was my focus. And I had a good assistant that kind of taught me the finer points of soccer. And so my job was injecting the discipline and the structure of what we wanted our team to be. And over the course of, it took about 3 years, and then things really started clicking, and they really haven't stopped there since. And so it's been, that's kind of a rewarding thing, is that after I left, it was still going on. So
let's jump in there. I mean, okay. You said you started with, you know, blank slate, not really even familiar with the content, you know, that what you're getting ready to coach. But you used outside resources. You said you had someone that maybe had some more soccer background, and then what did you do? How did you build a culture in that setting?
Well, I first decided kind of what it was that I wanted my team's performance to, how I wanted it to reflect as, you know, as a head coach, what the way that my kids played I knew would be a reflection of me, and so. Right. What did I want that to look like? And, you know, coming from the background I did, I didn't have to be pretty. It was just going to be tough. And blue collar was kind of our thing. And so, and at MacArthur, that we had the right mix of kids for that. And so we started with expectations. That was kind of the first thing, is what is it going to take to be a part of this team? What am I going to put up with? What will I not put up with? And being 24 and new at it, there were some things that I've over the years learned that it may be a little too hard-handed. But, you know, the kids, I would reflect every year and sort of adapt my process as we went forward, but sticking to the core values that we'd sort of set up. So, and over the course of the first couple of years, it was rough. I mean, we didn't win a lot of games, but we kind of got better every week, every game, every year. And then it was that third year, and I was blessed to have some really good athletes, which, man, that makes you a lot better coach. But the seniors came to me that August, and they said, we're not going to lose any games this year. And I was like, well, you know, you got it. And so, we didn't go undefeated, but I think we made it to the third round of the playoffs that year, which hadn't happened in a good while, at MacArthur in soccer. So, and then after that, it sort of just took care of itself. The kids understood, the seniors modeled the behavior that, that the, when the incoming freshmen, you know, when they would mess up, they, I didn't have to do as much work. And so one of the things I did, I think that I was very proud of, was that my captains, I didn't allow them to be the kings. They were the ones that had to carry the balls. They were the ones that had to clean up the field. They're the ones that had to clean the locker room and the bus. They served the other kids. It wasn't a, you have arrived. It was, you have more responsibility than anyone else. So
that's cool that you did that, because it reminds me a lot about you know, the culture of the military. To be in the Marine Corps, you know, a lot of business leaders and authors write books about the culture that we create, which is kind of what you're saying. I mean, the military, it's, you know, lead by example. You know, there's a book called Leaders Eat Last, because, you know, famously in the Marine Corps, officers let all the junior troops eat first. And so it's interesting that, you know, what that does for the culture, you know, because everybody, like you were saying, if the captains are the ones picking up the balls and, you know, doing the grunt work, so to speak, then it's like nobody kind of has an excuse to not, you know, do their share.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of power in being of service. And so, and there's no better way to inject sort of a positive atmosphere than when your best players are willing to do the hardest work.
Yeah, it was Bill and I think independently came up with a question that I think we're curious about is, did you have somebody, you know, a coach or, you know, a leader or somebody you looked up to that, you know, I guess most impacted your kind of coaching philosophy?
The head coach and athletic director that was at Medina Valley when I was here, and as well as his the defensive coordinator, Jay Patterson, probably had more to do with my outlook on what a coach should be. Him and his DC was Charlie Newman. And I've had the opportunity to talk to both of them, you know, kind of thank them, and that's and their positive words of encouragement this, you know, the last couple of years has been really good. But those two guys had a lot to do with it. And then, you know, over the course of the previous 17 years, and being, I think this is my sixth different school that I've worked at, I've had the opportunity to pick the brains of a lot of really smart guys, work for some guys, and, you know, and then you see some stuff that you definitely don't want to do. And I've kept a notebook for a long time about how I would do things if I had the opportunity. And I put the things I definitely didn't want to do and the things that I certainly did want to implement. And so I try to learn from other people's mistakes as much as possible. And that's kind of how I've gotten to where I'm at. That, and I read a bunch. So I know that Tony Dungy's book, The Mentor Leader, that's one of the first ones I started when I started on this self-education journey. That's that had a big impact on how I saw things. So
I like the piece on servant leadership. That's something that I have seen. You know, I've coached basically youth soccer, and I've coached up into as an assistant coach at the USL professional soccer level. And servant leadership is something that I've seen other coaches use before, and I think it's super powerful. We would also, I think it also instills in the young men or women that we're coaching, it instills a sense of responsibility and sort of ownership. And again, reflecting on why we're even talking about this, not just from a coaching perspective, but there's business leaders out there that are leading communities and teams, if you will, of employees. And when you can get an employee culturally bought in, they feel that they're empowered to lead. They understand what the example is, and they understand that they're serving others will create a better team environment. That's a super powerful, you know, it's a super powerful tool. And again, it's one of those for the young folks that you're coaching, that's a lifelong lesson. They're going to probably, those young men that were your captains are going to fall into a pattern where when they go to lead others in the future, they're going to lead as servant leaders, which I think is a very powerful model.
Yeah, that's, you know, you mentioned business. Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, is one that I read, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And for a business book to apply so fittingly to coaching, I was just amazed. But it does talk a lot about, you know, those CEOs that had the biggest impact over a long period of time in businesses that were already successful or were not successful had a lot to do with the fact that they did it in a way that when they got the right people on the bus, you know, it's one of the things they talk about. But, you know, allowing your the folks that work for you to be invested and to take risks and to know you're not always right and, you know, being willing to admit that stuff. But the hard work, that's the main part of it.
Was there like a I guess, a particularly painful or uplifting scenario you can remember back to those coaches that influenced you that you were like, hey, I'm definitely going to do this or not do this? Because, you know, in the podcast, we like to, you know, tease out some, you know, lessons like that that we can share with the audience.
You know, my experience as a player for the guys that I played for was so positive. They did such a great job of building trust and of, you know, they made you feel like I can't remember them ever saying that they loved me, you know, but you knew that they did. And,
Nice.
You know, as a player, the last thing you wanted to do was disappoint them. You know, I remember Coach Newman, like we came out after halftime of a game and I had done something wrong. I can't remember, but he looked at me and kind of cocked his eyebrow and tears just started coming into my eyes. I'm like, okay, I got to do better.
Yeah.
I mean, that was painful, but it was something else.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Can you talk to us about, you know, we've hit around the idea of values, and you clearly have some set in your mind for what a team and program should look like. Can you talk about values a little bit and maybe how you structure those and roll them out to your program?
That's something we've been in a lot of conversation about since I've taken on this job here. And, you know, we just met a week ago, actually, kind of how are we going to, what are we about and how are we going to get that message across? And it's not an easy thing. You know, we don't get to recruit our guys. We get what we get.
Right.
And so the most important thing for me, you know, I'm always going to go back to the blue collar example. I need people that are willing to work hard. That's not right. Just my kids, but my staff. You know, I think that whatever behaviors that we expect our kids to exhibit, we got to model that behavior. So if we want them to be early, we got to be early. If we want to work hard, you know, we got to work hard. And honesty and integrity, those are huge. You know, being accountable, I think, is huge. That's something that a lot of people miss. You hear a lot about, I do a lot of parent phone calls, and so I hear a lot of people talk about what their kids deserve. And I try to steer them to the word earn.
Right.
Something that I'll tell I even told our kids this before we left for the break. I said, look, I don't deserve to be your head coach. I don't deserve your trust. I don't deserve your respect. But I'm going to show up every single day. I'm going to try to earn it. And that's right. The same thing I expect from you. And so being accountable, earning what you get and working hard. And I think if you do those things and do them with integrity and honesty, then I don't think anything else, that sort of covers them all.
It does.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I was just going to say, on that note, you mentioned, you know, talking to the parents and, you know, kids earning things versus deserving things. Do you find that you try to coach everyone the same, or are there certain cases where you kind of have to adapt your style to connect with a certain player, or in some cases, maybe even their family?
I don't think you can ever coach any two kids the same. You know which ones you can get more out of if you push them harder. You can some of them you have to sort of coax things out of them. There's some kids that will respond to a nice tail ripping, and then some of them, if you do that, you're just gonna. They're going to get their back up and they're not going to listen to anything you have to say. So it's all about relationships. That's what this job is, and understanding who they are, respecting who they are, and also understanding where they're coming from. You know, you can get into a kid about being late, but, you know, you find out that he's not living at home. He's living with his buddies or with his girlfriend or something like that. And that's when you take some time to figure those things out, you can – be much more effective as a coach and as a mentor.
Yeah, it's funny. It reminded me, we recently interviewed a Navy SEAL. It's a kind of a, a life coach, and you know, he's like trained dogs and all kinds of stuff. And he was comparing, you know, training dogs to training kids or training people. He said, you know, like I have a Rhodesian Ridgeback, and then he trains, you know, typical military dogs like Belgian Malinois and German Shepherds. And, you know, a lot of these really smart, capable dogs, if you're too harsh on them, they'll just turn you off. You know, I mean, they'll just like, I'm not going to listen to you, you know, and it's not out of fear or anything else. It's just like, you know, I don't need this. If like you mentioned earlier, trust, and people are the same way. And sometimes some of the best of us are like that. You know, like you mentioned, I mean, there's certain kids that, you know, take it well and will really, you know, improve their performance by a good butt chewing. But other ones are just like, you know, I don't need this crap from you. But if you build that trust, you know, I think sometimes, you know, you can go both ways. So that's an important point, I think, not only for coaching, but just for, you know, leading people in life and really just leading people in your own family. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
I won't put you on the spot. I won't put you on the spot as a coach, but I can tell you as a coach in my experience, for the players, 50% of the outcomes that you get with your players is their parent and their structure at home. And again, my experience is mostly with soccer and soccer families and club soccer and things like that. And there is so much there's so much variability from family to family on the support they have at home, their resources, their coping mechanisms, and then also their expectations. And again, I wouldn't put you on the spot and say, have you run into situations like that? I can tell you, I've run into situations where parents' expectations and the pressure that puts on the player is so great that, I mean, these kids are walking around on eggshells and they're tight. You know, they can't play loose and have fun because they're so tight about a situation like that. So I like that have mentioned that component that you have to, you know, you engage a lot of parent conversations because that's half the battle.
And that's sometimes more than half. If, you know, if you have parents that are adamantly opposed to your philosophy or your style, or they have some chip on their shoulder about something, it's really hard to get a kid to believe and trust in you when they go home and they're hearing something that is, you know, very opposite to what you're trying to.
Yeah. Why'd they do that? That coach is an idiot or whatever. Yeah. They hear all that at home. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And also another piece, I've said this before in other scenarios, I also think the teenagers in particular, definitely on the women's side, but on the men's side, I'm sure it's the same. Kids nowadays don't get enough positive feedback. And there's too much armchair coaching when they get home, and it's always what they did wrong. I've left the field at a big soccer tournament, and we'll see a kid from another team that we just played in the car, and I can see the dad banging on the steering wheel as they're yelling at the kid.
Yeah.
And it just makes me feel so bad because I was like, I just saw that kid playing. And they're, you know, it's not one of my players, but it's an opponent, and they're just banging on their steering wheel, screaming at this player. And that, I bring that up not because it's one thing I saw. I see it all the time. And some of them will be browbeating them as they leave the field, you know, and it breaks my heart seeing that, especially in, you know, in sport, because it's supposed to be fun, you know, and I think that, you know, I don't know, I'm sure you've worked with athletes and maybe played at the next level a little bit, things like that. But it's they have to go on and play at a higher level. And I've worked with guys that are just now signing professional contracts in soccer and things like that. And it's really exciting to train with these really young, talented guys. But the reality is for them to get to that next level, they had to have a certain level of success, luck, and talent. And most of the guys that really make it through, they weren't guys that had their parents riding them nonstop in a negative way. And because they get tired of it. The sport doesn't have that joy to it anymore that I look forward to this. If you look forward to the big game on Friday night and you know that if you don't perform to some maybe unrealistic expectation, because let's face it, sometimes people are unrealistic about what their kid can actually do. Well, then what ends up happening is that becomes a negative experience for them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, who the heck wants to play in college or whatever, or, you know, move on to a higher level when you view it as a negative experience? Have you seen that at all?
That's a quick way to burn a kid out. Yeah, you see it all the time. But I want to go back to kind of what you were talking about is, you know, being positive with kids. I think what is more of a crime is that our kids are not allowed to fail at an early enough age. And so when they do finally fail, or they do finally get, you know, have to confront their own inadequacies or, you know, whatever it is, that's part of our job is pointing those things out and helping them correct them. If they get to high school and never experience that, it's devastating. And so, you know, as a dad, you know, my son, he's got himself a little girlfriend. He wanted to get her phone number, and he had to ask, you know, the dad, and he's going over to talk to him. He says, "What do I say?" I said, "Figure it out. You know, if you screw up, that's how you're going to learn. You know, they've got to fail."
Yeah, that's right.
That's an important point we've brought up in other scenarios is just that if you can't, you know, I guess create situations where your kids have to deal with adversity in comfortable settings, then, you know, you can't reasonably expect them to deal with it well in uncomfortable settings. You know, it's like safe when you're kind of in the trust tree in the family and, you know, normal day to day, but, you know, whether it's on, you know, a playing field or when they go off to college, it's like, man, you know, it's like the preacher's daughter scenario. You know, if you keep them so sheltered, when they get out and exposed to the real world and real adversity, it's like you have no idea what they're going to, or how they're going to act. So I think that, you know, letting them fail, but then, you know, building them back up is an effective way, whether it be in sport or, you know, having your son ask the girl out and, you know, get some rejection and now and then. So,
yeah, you know, that's I talk to our kids about it. This a lot is the, you know, it's through your failure that you learn. And if you're unwilling to fail, you're unwilling to try anything. And so you don't ever stretch yourself out as a person. But owning your mistakes is the only way that you can actually change your behavior. When you blame others for something that went wrong, you have given the power away of actually adapting your own whatever change that needs to occur to get better. So when you blame the officials in a game, well, you can't fix the officials. So you've given them all the power. There's nothing you can do. That's a victim mentality, and it's very unproductive when it comes to athletics, and I think in life in general, it's a crippling thing. So.
That may be our bumper for this episode, because that's like one of the wisest things I've ever heard. I have had so many situations where parents, players, coaches, they're so wrapped up in what the referee is doing and all these external events, and the reality is they're not handling their own business. They're not controlling the things they can control. You know, they're so worried about all the external stuff, and it's not fair and all those kind of things. I think that's probably that one pearl right there was worth interviewing you for sure, because I mean, it's true. And that's, and the funny thing is, like, we say these things and I can tell the three of us are having this conversation and it all makes sense to us. We were kind of raised in a, you know, same time frame, kind of probably similar backgrounds and all of that. I can certainly tell you coming out of, you know, Cal Allen High School and where I grew up, I can tell you that's exactly how I was raised. You better take care of your own business. And, but there's so many people that you would say something like that to, and because I've coached them and you say something like that to, and they look at you with like blank stare. They have no idea. That's not right. I mean, that referee, and it's all about that. And they'll talk about it and talk about it, talk about it. And that kind of stuff, that hit a nerve with me, because it's like that is a pet peeve of mine that you know, we talk a lot about Stoic philosophy and things like that on this podcast. And Stoicism basically is a philosophy that says you should deal with things as best you can. You don't get to choose whether it's good or bad what happens to you, but you do get a choice about how you respond to it.
That's exactly right. That goes a lot into athletics and coaching. And I mean, I got some guys on my sideline that work with me that they get so bent out of shape about bad calls. And I just, you know, when you focus on that, for one, you're taking the kids' focus away from the game. And I've never met an official that was any good. Now, I appreciate the job they do, but they're never going to call the game the way you want it to. And having coached soccer, that's very apparent. I mean, I about passed out one time and I said, that's it. I'm not ever screaming at an official again. So
Well, one of my good friends from college is actually an NFL white hat. And you talk about high pressure for a part-time job. It does pay very well, but you know, he told me I live here in the Philadelphia area, and he reffed an Eagles game, and he was just telling me about all the testing that they go through even during the year about just, you know, obscure rules and, you know, all the preparation. And so, like you're saying, I mean, you know, it's never going to come out perfect, but man, all the things those guys do at every level to be a referee, and it's a part-time job for everybody. Now, like I said, the NFL guys have a pretty sweet gig with how much they get paid for the part-time job, but all the preparation that they do at every level, you know, is not an enviable position. But like you said, I mean, to, you know, second guess that call is that important and get derailed from your entire game plan or what your job is really easy to do if the culture, you know, going back to culture, if the coaches, you know, get irate and can't get past it, then obviously the players won't either. So.
That's right. Model behavior you want to your kids to exhibit. That's it. And I don't believe there's anybody that does anything poorly on purpose. If you're out there with that hat on, you're going to do the best job that you can. I got to respect that. I'm doing the same thing on the sideline, and you know, everybody in the stands is going to yell at both of us, so it don't matter.
Yeah, good point.
So you talked about the role of culture and how you've tried to instill your values, and I like the way it's very clean. It's very, you know, we start with integrity, and I honesty and all the values that you laid out. How do you think now? How many year is this? Year three with Medina Valley? How far are you into with this program right now?
Well, this is my fourth year coaching here, but only the second year as the athletic director. So,
gotcha.
Started out as an assistant.
What kind of timeline do you see when you're trying to impose your plan? How does that what has been? You've seen this happen with other coaches, and you've watched what they've done. How long does this take to where you can look back and say, okay, it's working, we're following what I want to do, we're following my core values as a program, and then what does that look like? How would you measure that? Do you I heard you say you reflect every year, so I know that you're looking back to see. Tell me how you're measuring and what that process looks like.
Okay. In my mind, it's there. You can't do this in any less than 3 years. There are guys that come in and just flip programs. Those tend to be temporary, sort of fixes, gimmicky kind of things. If you're going to do it right, I think it's sort of a grassroots deal. And in 3 years, you ought to see the things that you're wanting to see. Now, years four and five, those things should continue to get more like you want them to be. And that's kind of what the timeline I've been going off of.
Right.
In terms of measuring the performance, you know, it's little things like counting a kid's reps in a weight room when he doesn't know you're counting them, and seeing if he's doing things the way I want him to do them. I don't have to stand over him and watch him for him to get every rep. He's going to do it because that's what he's supposed to do.
Right.
We also do things like, you know, this season I gave a program review, open-ended questionnaire to our kids, and ask them, you know, how can we improve? You know, what things did you like? What did you not like? And you know, sort of I don't even know how to describe it, but I read through those and see, are they saying the things that we've been telling them? You know, are they adopting the mindset?
Right.
And so when you start seeing more kids having adopted that mindset, well, then, you know, you're getting somewhere. And so is there a number or, something real hard and dry data that we can follow? No, but you get a pretty good sense of how things are going. And if it's going the right way, well, then you're doing something right.
Yeah, I think that's a smart way to do it because, we do the same thing in the military, you know, I call it, we do after action reports, but then we do kind of like a command climate survey, and which is more in line with what you're talking about, Coach. And you know, obviously there'll be some junk in there, as you probably have found out with the disgruntled players. You know, the guy that was first string and you know didn't work hard enough and got beat out, and so you know the program sucks because you know. But you will find some. I'm sure you already have some nuggets of wisdom in there, like kids that you trust. And you're like, wow, okay, that is a good point. And so getting, I guess, qualitative and quantitative assessment is always good, just to be, you know, self-aware as a program. So any interesting nuggets you want to share from, you know, that, without leaving the, well, names this, and details out?
Well, I didn't even ask them to put their names. And so one of the things that really stood out to me was, because I felt like that would make it more of an honest assessment. So, but one of the things that stood out was how many of them thought that we needed more discipline. You know, like they are asking for more rigid structure. And so, you know, that's something, and I wanted to do this now because we're getting ready to go into off season when we come back. And that's really where our next season begins, is in January. You play the games in the fall, but the work starts in January of the year before. So we're going to, you know, work to address those concerns and also some concerns that we have. And you know, this is where the work gets done.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, if you got, you know, obviously I'm sure you have, you know, have had some structure and discipline, but I mean, if you have a group that's, you know, saying, give me more, coach, I mean, that's probably a good sign going forward with that group.
Oh yeah. I could definitely lay on the gas pedal a little bit more. So you asked for it.
Yeah. Those are all great points. I was reflecting back to the last two seasons I coached with the USL Corpus Christi Sharks, which is kind of a semi-pro. It's a first level of professional soccer in the U.S. One of the things that I always told the players, this is a group of like 30 new players that were coming in for the summer season with us, I would always tell them as the assistant coach, my job, I said, I know soccer. I know what program we're trying to do here. I know what our values are as a coaching staff. But my job is to try to make you a better human being and maybe a better professional. So I love this, the content that you've kind of shared with us today about your values and how you've been, kind of trying to instill that first, because that's what I was doing with my players. Is I would say, like, what do you want to how do you want to present yourself as a professional? How do you, and I made them reflect on more than just the game. More, you know, how are you going to interact with the public and the kids that see you? Because there's people that look up to you, whether you like it or not. I think challenging the athletes to think about how they interact with the rest of the world. A lot of these guys, and players, generally just young people, are more focused on themselves. And it does help them. I think it broadens them and makes them a better human beings, which is the way I phrase it. I just want to make you better human beings when you leave here, because you're not going to be soccer players forever. You're not going to be football players forever. And if I can teach you something that how to take care of your body better, how to interact maturely with people around you, how to communicate effectively, and yes, how to prepare yourself for the highest level of technical expertise you can for this particular sport you're playing, then I've done my job right. So a lot of times I would look at, and I could see some of the guys that I worked with, you know, they would really handle themselves differently in certain situations because of some of those conversations we had. And I think that what you're doing, and sometimes these kids don't even have, they never had that type of structure. They never had someone that even talked to them that way. And there's a lot of families that don't have a coach or a person in their lives that will do that for them. How much do you see that your role, how much of that do you see as a coach or as a mentor to people that might not have that in their lives? Do you feel that, or does that seem like it's less important than I'm making it?
No, I think that is the ultimate goal of what we're doing. I mean, I work at a high school. You know, there's very few of these kids that are going to go on to do this professionally or right. anything else. But the experience of working towards a goal and overcoming adversity and improving yourself and how to think and how to prepare and how, those are all the things that's of utmost importance, because we might have one or two guys every year that are going to go play at the next level. Very few that are going to make a career out of it. And so if I can help them to be responsible, be willing to work, sacrifice things now so that you can have better things later, all the stuff that I would teach my own kid, that's really how I gauge whether or not it's worth teaching. Would I want my son to hear this or be a part of this program?
Right.
And that's That's really our job. It's more, you know, anyone can get up there and draw X's and O's, and it's, you got to understand who your kids are, what they can do. But you also got to believe in them and help them to become better than they are. And not just in athletics, but as a person. And so,
right. This is powerful stuff. I think you've given us a lot to chew on and multiple pearls of wisdom throughout this interview. As we start to wrap, I was just thinking back. I know which coaches we have in the pipeline, and I know, you know, some of the coaches we've already interviewed. And it's interesting to me, and I know you to be a quality human, and what you're trying to do and the thought that you're putting into it means that you're trying to apply structure, values to what you do every day. And what's interesting is I'm starting to hear, and I think as people listen to this coaching series, you're going to hear common themes over and over and over. And those themes are there because they're fundamental truths about how we learn and then also how we lead others, and especially young people. So it's really been, you know, fun talking to you about this. Before we start to wrap, I wanted to, Chris, any thoughts, questions, anything you want to, you know, comment on?
The only thing I was going to say is, you know, I like to listen to all the guests we have and interact a little bit. But, you know, as I start to assimilate, you know, some of the things the coach is talked about, it kind of reminds me back to a book or an idea that we covered about, you know, having a finite versus an infinite mindset, right? And so I think what Coach Crisp, at least in my words, is saying is, you know, investing in the players, you know, who they are as individuals long term, you know, they feel that, and they feel that it's not like transactional, right? And so I think if you look at coaches at every level and individuals at every level, whether you're going to go on to the next level or not, you know, the bond that you get with the players and what the players and the coaches get out of it is more valuable, you know. So I think that you know, some of the things that Coach Crisp said really reminded me of that kind of other concept that we talked about when, you know, we weren't even in a coaching series. So I'm glad that he shared with that. So thanks, Coach, and I know that your program is going to continue, and your, more importantly, your individuals in your program are going to continue to be successful in life, you know, not just football. So thanks for sharing that with us.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Sounds like you've read a little Carol Dweck.
Yeah, definitely Dweck, and this was specifically from also Simon Sinek, so he wrote a book talking about infinite versus finite mindset, and then obviously Leaders Eat Last. So, I mean, these concepts are universal when they're the right ones, so thanks for sharing that with us today.
Coach, any final thoughts or anything that you want to share with a listening audience as we close out?
Well, I mean, we've kind of talked about a couple different books and things, and I think that's something that we all need to, like I said, I was an English teacher for a long time. I also taught a little psychology and sociology, but anybody interested in sort of the concepts that we've kind of been covering, you know, I think I may have mentioned this guy to you, Bill, was Jordan Peterson, his 12 Rules for Life. That's a real interesting, if not an easy read, but it's
absolutely
good stuff.
And, yep, absolutely.
You know, It all these things do apply in multiple arenas in life, in marriage, in raising children. And so I think, like Dr. Peterson says, I wake up every day and I try to tilt the world a little bit more towards heaven, without being a, you know, I'm not out there thumping a Bible or anything like that. I do my best to model the behavior that I'm asking for my kids to adapt. And I don't know, I appreciate the time. This is don't expect to have these opportunities very often, and it's awesome to talk to people, have conversations about stuff that I feel is of utmost importance is a blessing. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, I guess I will let's end on that note, Coach. And again, thank you for sharing your wisdom, coaching insights, advice to other coaches, players, parents, and then, of course, just leaders. Coaches are mentors. They're not just for sport. So we'll close on that note. And thanks again. And look forward to maybe getting together with you next time I'm up that way towards our mutual friend, Wes Burns. Maybe have you come down and visit with us sometime in South Texas.
Sounds good. Or maybe I'll catch you at the racetrack.
Hey, that sounds like a good idea. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Coach.
Yes, sir.